the tabletop takeaway.
Game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop takeaway.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
I'm Charlie McCarron.
And I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And today is our bonus episode on programming games.
Beep, boom, boom, boom.
So, in general, I think what characterizes a programming game is that players simultaneously plan out a series of actions, and then they execute them. And when you're planning them out, you don't necessarily know exactly what other people are doing.
And we played three games. So we had Food Chain Magnate, Roll for the Galaxy, and most recently Mechs versus Minions. And we also have realized that we've played other programming games in the past.
Quite a few.
We're going to cross over. Now that we're into the number of episodes we are, there's going to be a lot of crossovers, I think.
Yeah. So Robo Rally is like kind of the classic programming game.
Heat
is another form of it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And when we picked this topic, the ones that sprung to mind were the ones like Robo Rally or Mechs versus Minions, where you're putting things in a line and you carry that out like a program.
Yep.
Like some other ones that I've played, River Dragons is like that, but not robot themed. but you're simultaneously trying to cross over rivers, and it's like, I better build a plank. Oh, but is someone else going to jump over my plank? Or does someone play a dragon on that time? So I think there's an interesting difference in how each of these games plays out, in that some of them are, you do your entire program at the same time, like Mechs versus Minions. Or is it like Robo Rally, where we each do our slot one, and then we do our slot two, and it creates a different level of chaos. Yeah. Like Robo Rally, among each other, it's a competitive game versus cooperative, like Mechs versus Minions, but I don't know. There's something interesting about that, too.
Well, and then the other one, the other option is when you resolve everything simultaneously, as in diplomacy.
Oh.
Diplomacy.
Okay. Tell us about... I have not played diplomacy.
Oh, you haven't played. Okay.
So, I kind of understand the... But, yeah.
So in diplomacy, I think it takes place in World War I, but basically each player is one of seven countries in Europe, you know, the major powers, and every turn or every round, I guess, you write down your orders for every army and every fleet you have on a sheet of paper. And then all of the orders are resolved at the exact same time. And there's a series of rules for how to do this. But the orders are very simple. Basically, an army or navy can move into a country or sea area, you know, depending on whether it's an army or navy. They can also support others in moving in. And also armies can be shipped across a contiguous group of navies. So the rules for resolving all the orders simultaneously are pretty simple. The complex part of the game is all the negotiations that happen, because you can't win it without getting other people to support you.
Hmm.
But there can only be one winner. So.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what I think is something that would be awesome to strive for as a designer, is if there is simultaneous play and reveal, like, can you make the game work that everything does happen at once and there's no like order of operations things you have to figure out, but at the same time then you kind of like limit yourself a lot in terms of how interesting you can make the interactions. So
yeah
I don't know.
So it's crazy, because so I mentioned in the last episode my game Archimagus I've been working on since, I don't know, 2016, I'll say. The very very first version was a programming game of Wizard Dueling, where you would build a little micro deck and you'd reveal cards at the same time as each other. And then they would react, you know, very Robo Rally, but there's no physical board or anything, so it's pretty easy to go through that order of operations. But I didn't have any health or anything like that. It was all about deck manipulation and kind of messing with each other's plans. But it is hard to design in that space unless you get some more, like, you know, experience playing these kind of games and really seeing what people have done with it. I think, honestly, Mechs versus Minions is the cleanest form of programming I've seen.
Yeah. I was thinking about that actually as we were playing. I'm like, wow, I forgot how quick this game goes.
Yeah.
And I think there is, like, Robo Rally took forever. and I think there's something to doing all your things on one turn in terms of, like, oh, I move, turn, move. And just, like, physically manipulating and doing all your stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you go around and alternate, you're introducing a lot of, I guess, friction, extra time, because, you know, players need to acknowledge the end of the previous player's turn. That takes a small amount of time, and these things add up.
Mm-hmm. And people tend to check out, too, if there's enough time between their turns.
Right.
Which means they have to re-engage, understand what's happening, put in their thing. And, like, it really can bog the game down a little bit.
It's easy to underestimate how much little moments like that. I've become very aware of this myself.
Yeah.
But just the tiniest things in games, like shuffling,
mm-hmm.
You know, having to, like... exchange things in two ways rather than one way. So, like, you know, doing a trade of one thing for one thing as opposed to just taking a thing.
Oh, sure.
Mm.
Which is in Sprocket Forge, the trading mechanic is basically you take other people's waste, and that's very quick because you don't need to also think about what you're giving in exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Just all sorts of tiny little manipulations really add up, and if you can eliminate them, you can make a huge difference in the game, even though it's not the sort of difference that players might consciously notice.
Yeah. Well,
and especially when those little moments have even a small aspect of choice to them.
Yes. Yeah, that suddenly that makes it even worse.
It grows.
Yeah. Well, and like interrupts or interrupt cards. We haven't really played many of those games where you can interrupt each other, but there is a lot that's like, I'm doing this thing. Do you want to interrupt me?
Interrupts are okay if, like, in a cooperative game where you can retroactively change things, like in Spirit Island. That's some place that's the great thing about co-op games. You can just, well, one of the great things is if it's set up so that you can retroactively change things.
Yeah.
Because that makes it a lot simpler.
And especially because you don't, like, feel robbed as one of the players. It's helping everyone. And I know we talked about that in our co-op episodes, but, like, if it's helping everyone, yeah, well, let's rewind, go back a few steps. And, you gave me that ability before, and I have this now, and now I can do this cool thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels good to then be able to do the cool thing that you should have been able to do but forgot about something.
Yeah. Well, actually, the other thing about Mechs versus Minions that I think saves a lot of time is that your programs are mostly fixed.
Right.
Because in Robo Rally, you have to make a brand new program every round. But in Mechs versus Minions, most of your program is just whatever you were doing last turn. You just add one or two cards to it.
And the draft literally has an hourglass tied to it. So you cannot take much time to do the draft, which is the choice.
Yeah. And the other game that Mechs versus Minions reminds me of is Root, specifically the Eerie Dynasties and Root.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who are also playing a programming game. And the Eerie also has a similar dynamic of, you know, the getting stronger over time. Although Mechs versus Minions doesn't have quite the same sense of obligation.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the Eerie, as your program builds up, you get stronger, but you also have more responsibilities. Whereas, for the most part, the program building up is pure upside. Yeah. I guess there are a couple minor side cases where, like, okay, now you have to move two spaces instead of one, and maybe you didn't want to move two spaces, but usually it's just a straight upgrade.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is making me think back to my glasses game, which I often talk about, where we're surviving on a ship, and one team is the computer team. And my original program for them was thinking more like an old school computer program that goes one line to the next. And I thought I was being so clever because I was like, well, all the regular upkeep of this turn is going to be handled by the computer. It's like, oh, you know, remove two food, move the ship and all this stuff. And you could, like, tweak things along the way. And some of them were decision points. But players really didn't like that. There was a, it felt like they were just going through the motion of this program. So I guess I use that as an example of what not to do in a programming game, where maybe the players don't have a choice on what. Everyone asked, hey, can we like program this ourselves rather than just go through this operation of, they're making choices, but they're not, yeah.
And well, and where and how frequent is the agency for the programming games, right? Because yeah. You had maybe limited agency or opportunities for that agency mm-hmm. in the game itself. And so maybe they're just having like, I want to have more control over this thing that's so fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Where like in Mechs vs. Minions, we actually had agency not only in the cards we added to our tableau, but also in a lot of the abilities we got to choose like left or right or straight. Or, you know, do you attack that one or that one? Mm-hmm. You know, we had a lot more flexibility with those individual abilities. And so maybe even just like minus two food or someone dies. You know, mm-hmm. like there's having little moments of agency can be helpful too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I guess as a counterpoint, like the other style of game that we played, Roll for the Galaxy, that is a fixed order of these mm-hmm. actions that we're doing.
The central decision in that one is which action do you ensure happens versus right. where do you place your bets and hope right. for the best.
So that has a lot more risk to it, where like you're trying to put like maybe hedge your bets over, well, do I spend an extra die to convert it to another die to something else? Or do I think Charlie is going to explore this turn? So I want to double down on explore so that I can get all those.
Yeah.
Which I think was the most interactive of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, this one is cooperative.
Right.
Yeah. Or not this one. Mechs versus Minions, the yeah. last episode.
This is Mechs versus Minions part two.
Yeah.
Essentially, we like that game.
Yeah. Mechs versus Minions is co-op, and, you know, it is interactive, but... You're not really trying to predict what the other players are going to do so much. Well, you can just ask them.
Right.
Yeah.
And Food Chain Magnate is extremely interactive, but I feel like the programming aspect of it is not as interactive as Roll for the Galaxy, just because of that betting aspect.
Right.
The risk versus reward. You know, and the other great thing about the way that the Roll for the Galaxy sets it up is it gives you a default option that may or may not be quite risky.
Mm.
Like, people are often averse to taking risks, but in Roll for the Galaxy, the easiest option is often just leave the dice where they are rather than trying to reassign them. But where they are may be a high-stakes bet.
Right.
So I really like that it encourages you to think about how likely do I think this is based on what other players are going to do? What do I think they're going to do? Am I okay taking this bet
mm-hmm.
rather than just not taking the bet by default?
Yeah. Yeah, that advantage of the programming games, like we talked about, that secret stuff and then a reveal
yeah.
is mm-hmm. always fun.
Yeah.
But in cooperative Mechs versus Minions, we don't necessarily have that reveal, but it's still like, I don't know exactly what Trevor's going to do until I get to watch his program. I could look over there and see, but it's more fun to just...
And even then, because you have those little moments of agency throughout your program, you can maybe figure out a couple things that may happen, but it may not be 100% of what I'm going to choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so also, as you pick up more damage in that game, that creates more chaos in your tableau, which may cause unexpected results, which, you know, kind of brings it more into more like Robo Rally or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think Mechs versus Minions is focusing more on a different aspect of programming games, which is that you have a plan that's set in stone and you have to carry it out. Which Roll for the Galaxy doesn't really do, because I don't think you even have to use the dice that you assign if you don't want to.
No, they just go back to your cup, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And once again, Food Chain Magnate is kind of in the middle. Most of the actions in Food Chain Magnate are either Well, a lot of them are either optional or things that there's no real downside to doing. But there are some where there is definitely a downside, such as reducing your prices.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to just ask you guys, like, now that we've played these and have been thinking about it, what would you do for a design that's a programming game?
I'd want to pick up a previous game, I think very similarly to what Ananda's going to say, of mine. And really kind of explore the original version of Archimagus again and just see if I could do something to make it competitive and just play around in that space a little bit, because there was something there. It just took, you know, 4 hours, very similar to Robo Rally. And it's like, well, how do I get this to run smoother and faster? And so having more of a fixed program that you're adding to instead of it being like a deck builder might allow for that. And so like finding those little moments of when is the agency, when do you have the choice? And do things have a variable output? And then maybe that is fixed. And so just like kind of playing with that template, I think is going to be really fun.
Yeah, so I actually have a couple games that are programming or programming adjacent. There's Kludge, of course, my game about robots that have a program that just steadily grows longer and you never goes away. You just have to keep hacking fixes in, which I haven't visited in a while, but some of the insights from having all those disposable minions running around everywhere makes me think of maybe revisiting that. Although it would be pretty similar to Mechs versus Minions, honestly. So I don't know how worth it would be if I added in minions to kill accidentally or not. but that would solve the problem of wandering around aimlessly. The other game, I guess, I'm not sure it counts as programming. It's more of a simultaneous reveal thing. But my card game Weavers, which was sort of a wizard fight type thing, that involved every turn both players choose a card from their hand and reveal it. So very short program, probably not really qualifying as a program, except that Weavers also has a bit of the fixed sequence dynamic built in. I mean, you can change what card you play, but each of the spells that you play has an immediate effect and has another effect that you unlock if you generate the right combination of symbols with other cards you play. So you aren't locked into your program, but you are punished if you deviate from sort of
the pattern.
Yeah, like say you want to cast a fireball, and to cast a fireball, you have to do symbols A, then B, then C, then C, then B. Mm. That means you probably want to play spells that generate C next turn, B? B next turn, followed by C the following turn, and then another C, and then another B. Because if you don't do that, your fireball is wasted. So it's sort of like, I guess, soft programming restrictions.
Sure.
And your opponent, in theory, could predict what cards you're going to play, except in practice they probably can't, because the symbols are tied to cards in ways that are not easily predictable to a new player.
Sure.
Yeah, I think for me, it's reminding me of a game idea I had a while back that had like little cardboard ships that are passing in front of everyone. It was like about smuggling in space. And that game started out because I had that kind of similar idea where you programmed your small deck of cards and you tried to figure out what's the best order to put these in, and then you're going to reveal one at a time. And somewhere along the lines, it changed what that was, but I never actually tested it because I just had this inkling that it was going to be too hard to plan something meaningful out of an entire, like, 10 cards. Because I was imagining that maybe not having any feedback along the way is like, oh, my plan didn't work. Bummer. My one thought that I would want to return to is actually maybe I could lean into the chaos and like revolve the game around that craziness. Like, I think that would be a really funny, well, let's see what I did. Is it going to work out? And then you flip a huge deck of cards over and something chaotic and funny happens. And maybe leaning into the mechs versus minions idea, that's like, well, there's lots of stuff on the board, so even if I didn't do my original plan, like, I did something. But
yeah, and I think really, like, when having MOBA-style games like Mechs vs. Minions, or, you know, where you have a lot of things that can happen on the board, making sure the players have ample opportunity to interact with things, I think, is really the key. It may not be towards the primary objective, but if it can be towards a secondary objective or, like, anything else, even just, like, protecting something for once, like, or for one round, like, yeah, just something that they don't feel like their entire turn is wasted.
Yeah.
Because that is the toughest thing as a player.
Right.
Yeah.
Which can happen a lot if you're very strict about the, you know, having to go through the steps of the program in a game like Robo Rally or
right.
Mechs versus Minions without the minions.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And maybe something that could work is like, okay, you reveal a card, you're hoping that it works for the ability on the card, but if it doesn't, maybe you can always just trash it and gain a resource or something like that. Like, yeah, it counts for something. The plan didn't go as well as I thought. Well, it didn't create this like amazing combo, but
I'm realizing I don't even know if we mentioned that about Mechs vs. Minions, but all of the cards on the bottom have a scrap ability. So if you pick up a card in the draft but don't want to put it in your tableau, you can just scrap it and get the ability and either repair one or swap something in your tableau.
Yeah.
And give you a little bit more flexibility there.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that having that kind of, yeah, that potential there to really just have a little bit of shifting around is really helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, Charlie, I want to circle back on something you mentioned about feedback.
Yeah.
Because I think that is a good point, actually, that in programming games, it is quite easy to end up in a situation where player feedback is delayed. And mm-hmm. Of course, feedback is extremely important in game design because players need a way to evaluate whether what they're doing is working, you know, whether they're actually doing a good job at the game or not. And so the game, you know, yeah, the game needs to communicate that to them. But with programming games, you know, if it takes a long time to program and then resolve the program, it's not great for feedback. I guess it helps a little bit that you explicitly see what you did in the past as it's resolved. Mm-hmm. But there's still quite a delay between making the choice and being rewarded for the choice, which is maybe a challenge to be overcome in programming games.
But go ahead.
Well, what one game it makes me think of actually is Mamma Mia. Which is a game in which you're making pizzas and everyone's playing ingredient cards onto a central pile and then trying to guess if enough ingredients have been placed on the pile to make a pizza. But you don't actually get to find out if your pizza succeeded until the end of the round after the pile has been built, which is a very long time after you make the initial choice of whether or not to put a pizza. So that's, you know, a difficulty there, right?
Yeah, and I would actually say Food Chain Magnate is very similar in that, like, you don't see the fruits of your decisions for a couple rounds after you've done them.
That's true.
And so, like, yeah, I didn't know if I was doing well until I realized I wasn't getting money and you two were. I'm like, oh, no, what have I done?
Well, and actually, especially how long you have to delay gratification with training employees.
Yeah.
Since you have to wait several rounds before you can even use them.
Oh, yeah.
But it's pretty thematic to making a food chain. Like, did the marketing campaign work? I don't know. Did anyone show up for pizza?
Yeah. Oh, that's why I didn't sell any, because they all went to the cheaper place. That makes sense. Okay.
But I will say, in addition to that, though, sometimes I think like one of the biggest boosts of whatever dopamine or some other neurotransmitter that we get when we're gaming is like this feeling like, ooh, I set up a plan and then the plan worked like multiple rounds later. So like maybe as a first timer, you don't get the huge rush because you don't exactly know what's going to happen.
But you hopefully get something, right? You get something that connects.
Yeah.
And clicks, and it's like, oh, oh, if I had just done, okay, I need to like rewind time and start like do that this time.
Yeah.
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 Well, and I guess the benefit of programming games for that is that you see your exact plan because you had to lay it out beforehand.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you know exactly what it is that you did.
Yeah. And if it goes awry, then usually it's like pretty funny. So
and you can see exactly where it went awry too.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, we were talking about Food Chain Magnate and how you know, putting out your employees is the programming aspect, but I'd almost venture there's a secondary programming aspect with marketing and production, where you have to have the marketing in place and then the production in place. And it has to be very like sequential, and then you also have to have the demand for your place. And so it's very abstract programming, but it has to happen very sequentially. And so you're like making this very solid, tangible plan, but there's another almost program that you're trying to run to make it work as efficiently as possible that you have less control over directly. You have more indirect control over it, which I think is, I was thinking about that while we were talking, and I was just like, oh man, that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, all right, I guess I need a takeaway.
We all do.
Sure.
We all do. I think my takeaway probably is that very strict fixed programs mm-hmm. can work, which was something I was not sure about after previous attempts to make Kluge work.
Yeah.
And in particular, that that very rigid fixed programs that don't change can work especially well if you add in lots of little objectives that people can accidentally satisfy while they're resolving their program.
Yeah.
And that maybe that's the key to making very strict fixed programs work.
Yeah. And then like having a secondary benefit that you can unlock that's not related directly to the program.
Yeah.
Those special abilities are great.
Yeah. So you can just sort of flail around and accomplish stuff. And, yeah. And if your choices are able to accomplish just a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
that's a success.
Yeah.
I think my takeaway is I had a more of a strict idea of programming games as being like you do your programming row. And so when you introduced Food Chain Magnate as one, I was realizing like, oh, yeah, I guess it's kind of like a program as long as you pick more than one thing simultaneously.
Yeah.
They resolve.
Yeah. And because I've made some games that are like simultaneous action selection. Everyone picks mm-hmm. one thing, like Citadels or something is that kind of game where you pick one thing and then you do it. And then there's some order of operations to who goes first. And but this is making me think, oh, what if you just, you know, pick a couple things at a time simultaneously and then see what happens. So somewhere in between like a giant row of programming, that's a very specific kind of game. But, you know, picking a couple yeah. things at once is cool too.
Well, and in Food Chain Magnate, there is an order that's built into the cards themselves. Mm-hmm. So the player doesn't decide the order in which things occur, but there is still a very strict order that quite often matters a lot, actually.
Sure. Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I just didn't get there because I was only using 3 workers at a time, where Ananda had 19 workers at a time.
Well, and you know, actually, it's not my takeaway, but I did want to talk a little bit about that because Food Chain Magnate, you don't play the characters in the order that you prepare them. You play them in the order that they act.
Yeah.
So they all have their own like internal initiative that resolve together. So all of your, you know, recruiters resolve together. You know, you don't have separate, like, okay, I'm going to recruit and then train and then recruit again and then train again. Like, it's all grouped together, which helps make it more efficient and quick. And I really appreciate that. I just wanted to say that because another thing I realized that wasn't quite connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is a little bit tied to my takeaway, too. My takeaway is that you can have, you know, the fixed programs are really great if you can improve them and if you have a vehicle to manipulate them and change them over time to grow to being what you want them to be. And I think that's a really interesting thing when I compare it to something like Robo Rally, where you have a deck and you can improve the deck over time, almost like a little bit like a deck builder-ish, right? But it doesn't quite have the same feel because you still don't know how everyone's going to act in, you know, slot to slot as you resolve each individual slot independently. So I guess the secondary part of mine is that having people resolve all of one chain together feels a lot better than an individual card at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Like, you got the chaos benefit from Roborally. And yep. Like, I know what my program is right? doing, like, but someone might push me out of the way, and then my program is.
And then I'm going to run screwed. Into this laser for a while and just sit in front of this laser, which I do remember I did. We didn't even finish that game, and I still remember that I kept moving between lasers. Like,
Cool. Well, hey, Trevor, do you want to talk to us about the design challenge?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to do that because I just released the other two. So, now you'll know when I actually recorded this episode. But, yes, there's going to be a design challenge. It's going to be very simple. And it's going to be on our Discord under design challenges. There's going to be a channel for it specifically. I think this is going to be 6 or 7. I don't know for sure which it's going to be. But look over there. There's other challenges up there already. People are participating a little bit, which is great to see. I love people getting inspired by things or finding some of their old designs and seeing if they can, you know, dust it off and see if it works for them still.
Yeah,
it's a good time.
So yeah, if you're inspired by this programming games series, see what you can do with programming. Do you have an existing game, like you said, that you can dust off and add some programming element into it to make it more fun? Who knows?
Yeah.
So with that, we will wrap up this series and hope you tune in next time.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.